Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 488. Science Faction, I call BS.
I have missed being spanked in front of our audience. It's only a matter of time before I get spanked even dirtier because we're cleaning up our act. We met a good Christian woman and she's turned us around.
Well, no. Well, I guess, but that would just be the Monday episode that gets released. That's the good Christian woman
we're
that turned us around.
We're still a freak in the sheets.
Yes, exactly. But we still go off on the DL, I don't know, to like a shrimp restaurant bathroom.
And you bang me.
Yes.
There in a gimp mask.
That's right.
That's what I call BS. Somebody walks in, you're calling me an idiot. Like, no, Damien, I'm sorry, that's wrong. And a scientist is watching normally. And the person just leaves the bathroom.
It's just Dr. Troy going, do it again.
I think that we need another bonus question. I can go another round. Do you want to record next week's episode right now, Damien? Because, like, I'm Dr. Troy and I'm pumped. I'm jacked.
Speaking of Dr. Troy, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing great. And I apologize. Dr. Nick, Ian, they all like stomping me. It's not just all Dr. Troy. I don't mean
Oh, yeah. Dr. Nick has a really nice, subtle way of doing it, too, where like he's really kind and sweet about it, but you can tell by his face that he's taking joy in your misery.
Yeah, even Robert or original Bobby, OG Bobby, good Bobby. You know, he's somebody who is a good human, helped march for science, but you could tell when he beats me, he's defeated an evil. Like, he's made the world a better place.
I still, to this day, one of my greatest moments ever in that studio was the time that Dr. Troy beat you and just yelled, fuck you, Damien.
Dude, that's a victory for me. I won. I beat science the day I got a man who looks at me in the same way that I look at a chimp intellectually. I got him to break and say, fuck you.
It was like the Don Henley song, The Day the Music Died, only it was the day the science snapped.
That was a big win for Damien the Heel of Science Faction, brother. Let me tell you what, I got Troy into a mental suplex, and I wouldn't let him go.
All right, let's move right on to I Call BS.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
All right, I call BS, the game where I read four science news articles, some of which are real, some of which are BS, standing for bad science. They could all be true, all be false, or any combination thereof in between. Damien, are you ready to play?
I like how just like the In-N-Out menu, you leave the secret menu of rules out of sight. Like your cash register has all the menus.
So, but here's why it's so ridiculous that you're saying that. Because if we were to say, okay, you have to list like every rule. At some point, I'm listing the rules of grammar that you have to respond to. Like, you have to have a subject and a verb and an object in your response in order for me to understand you, because that's the way the English language
disagree.
Works.
I disagree about language is whatever you want to be. I just free jazz when I come up here and play I Call BS. I don't know what bullshit's going to come out of my mouth. Shabab, shaboob, shabang, bad science, anti-vax, fuck my mask. Shabab, shaloobab, shaloobab,
babababab. That's honestly the best jazz I've heard in a long time.
I think we put this episode up for a Grammy.
It's like us and Glee. All right, article number one. A recent Nature article detailed the disappearance of more than 100 open-access scientific journals in the past 10 years and warns that as many as 900 more may be at risk. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. I do not believe in the Hamburglar of science articles, the articler. I listen, I know that he's all the rage in the scientific underworld, all these scientific criminals like, look out, the articler is coming. I hear he takes articles when you're not looking.
It would be great if he was actually just a ripoff of the Hamburglar, but like instead had Doc Brown hair or something.
Marty, I go back in time and I steal from scientists to get the patents on things. Did you know that I own the patent for the cotton gin and the Tesla?
Sorry, Damien, this is in fact science. Here's what they're saying, and here's why it's interesting. So these open access journals have disappeared or are no longer accessible. This is what they're saying. 100 of these open access journals over the past 10 years have disappeared, and some of the articles are no longer accessible from their original website. So obviously this is a problem, because now those articles are inaccessible, and then if we have 900 more that might happen soon, then, oh, look, you better watch out. You better not publish in these open access journals, because they might just disappear, and then your stuff would go nowhere. Wouldn't want that to happen.
The articler will strike again.
Yes. Which would be true, except most legitimate journals are actually backed up by redundant servers or co-publications or other things like the university libraries, and most of those articles are still available somewhere. You can still get them even if the original journal went under. But the reason I wanted to bring this up is there's a reason Nature published this article. Nature, which is owned by a conglomerate of journal publications that owns like approximately a third of the scientific journals that anybody actually reads, is a gigantic, gigantic business. It is a 60-some-odd billion-dollar-a-year business. I want you to keep in mind that porn is a $6 billion-a-year business. This is 10 times the size of porn.
Pornhub made it free. I haven't paid for porn in years.
They truly are the Robin Hood of porn, aren't they?
Yeah.
They stole from the hot and gave to the horny.
Not only that, but their marketing is continually on the right side of history. After the George Floyd murders, they made all their black porn free, like on premium and everything. like they featured only ebony porn.
Oh, like, that's great.
How is a company that the only company that I come to outside of New Balance shoes, because they're the only one that make a double wide that fits my foot. How are they on the right side of history? New Balance is not on the right side of history. They are big Trump supporters, and I wear my shoes with shame, but I know that I'm ejaculating to the only shoe that has ever fit me in my size 15 life.
Here's the reason I think this story is actually interesting. Nature is part of this huge business, and that business is starting to crumble away. As these open source journals come up, especially big ones, Plus One, PubMed, all these big giant open source journals coming out, they're kicking Nature's ass because people don't need subscriptions to go to them. They're more available. They're internationally available. You don't need money. There's no paywall blocking them. That means that you as a researcher can get your research seen more easily by people, and that also that other people can read whatever they want. This is a really big deal, and it's the future of science. And Nature is the history of science. And this is literally, I look at this article as the horse dealer in 1908 yelling about how cars will just blow up and kill you if you're not careful.
Or the oil companies fighting against solar.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
All the typewriters companies coming out against word processing.
Nature is an incredibly powerful organization right now. The organization Encelvir or whatever it is, the parent company that owns Nature and owns a bunch of other stuff, is incredibly powerful. They're literally blackmailing the University of California right now, along with tons of other universities. They're a somewhat despicable organization, morally, that has a lot of power. But that power is fading. They're at the height of their peak of their power right now, and it is going to be gone. And open access is the reason and the path for which they will be gone. And it doesn't at all surprise me that all of a sudden, yeah, we are seeing the, hey, solar panels will make your dick smaller, brought to you by ExxonMobil ads, basically, from Nature.
Hold on, wait. Repeat that thing about the dick, because I was all about open access journals, but... I don't want to take a chance. Why take the chance? Why take the chance on penis size?
Oh, man, how long does your penis have to touch the solar panel before it shrinks? Because if it's anything less than 2 hours, I'm already fucked.
Man, I've been humping that thing every night trying to get power.
Nah, just casually drape it on there.
Hey, baby, what are you doing up here on the roof?
I like to casually just drag it along to make that weird glass slipping noise as it goes through.
Oh, that's hot. Oh, yeah.
I get a lot of UTIs as a dude, I gotta say.
This is the type of stuff you can only catch on our Patreon.
All right, article number two. A Florida teenager recently died because of an infection with a brain-infecting amoeba that he caught from swimming in a lake. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science and something that I am actively terrified of. Brain amoebas ever since. There's always a Dateline article or something that scares moms about kids and they won't ever allow their kid to do X ever again. For me, it was that neti pot and the brain amoeba that was caught through the tap water one time.
Oh, that's right.
I am severely nasally congested right now, and I have not neti potted it out because, God forbid, just as you're terrified of the prion disease, I'm terrified of brain amoebas.
I mean, you could just get sterile water, but okay, fair enough.
I'm not going to do pee, Bobby. I'm not going to pee in a neti. Wait, actually, Bobby, I think you've solved it.
I promised I'd never let another man pee in my nose again.
It is kind of a fun tube that form fits to things. If you're willing to let him use his hand to line things up, I think it could be actually a pretty effective neti pot, especially if he's been drinking heavily that night.
And frankly, how else are you going to get a free ride to Moscow? I mean, first class, so.
I love Russia.
Damien, this is actually science. This is the second one in Florida this year. We've covered this before. We've covered this thing. Dave, this is one of the reasons Damien said he's so terrified of it. It's a single-celled amoeba that lives in warm, fresh water called Naegleria fowleri. And the problem happens when the amoeba gets up your nose. Like, it's not like you swallow it and that's the problem. You can swallow it all you want. It doesn't do anything. If it gets up your nose, it can make its way into your brain. And once it does, 97% of cases are fatal because an amoeba is just a single-cell organism. So antibiotics don't work. It's not a bacteria. Antivirals don't work. It's not a viral. Antifungals don't work. It's not a fungus. We don't really have a lot. Now, there is this one drug that shows some promise, but pretty much if you get it, you're going to die. And this poor 13-year-old just swimming in a lake ended up getting it. And there's like, you literally all you can do is just tell the person's parents, like, I'm really sorry. This sucks. And there's nothing you can really do about it. Really, really unfortunate. And it's something that we are seeing as a result of climate change. These waters, these lakes are warmer because of climate change. And quite frankly, 50 years ago, you wouldn't be getting this swimming in there. Most likely not, maybe on a few days, a few hot days or something. But this is the result of climate change. This is what happens is we get warmer and the microbes around us start adapting to the environment we're in. A lot of times that can also mean they can adapt better to our own environment inside of our bodies.
That man had so many pickups with truck nuts to purchase in his lifetime. He was cut short. He had so many jet skis to jump over gator pits. And this proud Florida man.
I could have had so many illegitimate children and a fan boat.
Dozens of feet of mullet will never be grown.
He would have unironically worn suspenders with only one strap on them to public events.
His daughter had to get married sometime to another closely related relative.
He once won a small local lottery, but wasted the money customizing a Dodge Ram to look like the NFL team, the Miami Dolphins, who have been a losing team for 45 years.
He wasn't going to get the Buccaneers, I'll tell you that. Not a Tampa Bay fan. He wears his merino jersey to weddings with pride.
Well, it was a nice one.
The away jersey.
I would like to see it. I want to see a tuxedo version of a jersey for wedding events, for white trash wedding events.
Dear God, the Dan Marino jersey.
All right, article number three. A new paper details how high-altitude hummingbirds survive freezing winter nights by going into suspended animation at night and allowing their body to chill to near-freezing temperatures without damage. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. You start those little cars, they're not going to start back up in the morning if it's frozen. No, no, no. Two
little cars?
The hummingbird is the Honda Civic of the avian community, whereas like the Condor would...
Isn't it really more like a smart car or something?
Okay, Bobby, you and I need to agree on dimensions for this analogy.
The smallest bird.
Fine, it is a smart car, right? If you leave a smart car turned off overnight in Scandinavia, good luck starting that thing in the morning.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Interesting reasoning. David, this is actually science, and it's very, very cool. So one species of a high-altitude hummingbird in South America even had the lowest temperatures ever recorded for a bird or non-hibernating mammal at just over 3 degrees Celsius, meaning 3 degrees above freezing. They do this by going into what's called torpor, which is kind of like a small version of hibernation. Basically, it is a form of what you could call suspended animation where your breathing slows down, your metabolism slows down, your heart rate slows down, and your body can get to colder and colder temperatures. By the way, something I didn't learn until a few years ago that I was kind of embarrassed I hadn't learned until a few years ago, hibernation is actually reserved for small animals. And this is due to a fact of physics, which is just the surface area versus volume. As you increase something, you get much more volume on the inside of it. Take like a sphere. As that sphere gets bigger and bigger, there's way more volume inside of it relative to the surface area. Surface area gets bigger, volume gets bigger much more quickly, square cubed. And so because of that, only small animals can basically get their body down to that temperature and then be able to warm up and stay alive. Large animals just can't. They can't get their body down that far. They can't shut their body down that hard because they have too much mass and wouldn't be able to restart
it. What about the bear?
That's what I learned. That's why it's so interesting. Bears don't hibernate.
Huh.
Yeah. So we've been told this our entire life. Oh, hibernating bear. No, bears, similar to these hummingbirds, go into torpor. Now, the torpor that hummingbirds are going into, they're doing it every night to then make it their way through the night, the cold night. They wake up in the morning, they go do their thing. The bears are going through torpor through long periods during the winter. And the biologist who explained this difference to me, he explained it this way. Hibernating animal, their temperature can drop well below that, actually can go below freezing in some cases. Their body cannot wake up. They're essentially in a suspended animation. They're in this sleep. You can take a hibernating ground squirrel, pick it up and start throwing it up in the air, like juggling it. You could juggle a hibernating ground squirrel. It's not going to wake up. It's hibernating. If you go into a bear's den in the middle of winter while they're in torpor, you can be too loud and that thing will wake up and eat your ass. So like, it is not hibernating, and it's actually a pretty big distinction to make because you don't want to wander into the fucking bear den in the middle of winter because it's not hibernating, it's torpor.
Now, Bobby, now that I got you in this bathroom and I'm explaining the difference between hibernation and torpor, let me use a more real life example. And he pulls out his penis. This penis is flaccid, and you might say it's in torpor, but all your talk in this bathroom is waking it up. You know, knowledge has a price. I didn't just take it out for air.
I've been called the alluring smell of fresh game for a penis. Like, well, I bring penises out of torpor.
Oh, it's been sensing your pheromones since you walked into this bathroom, honey.
Oh, dear. And lastly, article number 4. A new study suggests that migraines, previously thought unpredictable, are often preceded up to a week ahead of time by very particular symptoms. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science. Migraines are predicted a week beforehand by being in the presence of a recorder, the wind instrument.
So, like, every third grade teacher?
Dying all the time. They don't even know why. They just, because it hits a week later. They think it's just their husband talking about teaching recorder practice and complaining about his migraine.
Sorry, Damien, this is bad science. Meaning, by the way, that you got 3 out of 4 wrong, just so you, in case you were keeping
track. I have scored perfects before and you still shit on me, so
I wasn't keeping score those times, but regardless, this one is bad science.
It became very evident that you forgot the score afterwards.
But what they did find was that this statement, a medical incident previously thought unpredictable, is actually often preceded up to a week ahead of time by very particular symptoms. It's not true for migraines, but it is true for strokes. Very exciting news, because strokes can cause death or permanent brain damage, and very specifically with strokes, the longer between the time you have the stroke and you get to a hospital and they can get oxygen to your brain, the longer that period of time is, the more brain material you lose, the more brain that dies. So not only do you want to get somebody to the hospital as soon as possible if they have a stroke, if you could predict a stroke a week ahead of time, you might be able to get rid of all of the damage, right? If you have that person who's now he's on, some blood thinners and anti-stroke medication, and we're hanging out at the hospital just in case, we could do a lot if we could predict a stroke. Now, they were only looking at certain types of strokes, and they found that they were often preceded by transient ischemic attacks, or TIAs, which were like warning strokes or mini strokes. They're symptoms similar to a stroke, but they last less than 5 minutes and it doesn't injure the brain. But these would sometimes happen 6 or 7 days before the event. Now, people would just wave them off. It's not like you get one of these and you're gonna have a stroke. But when they looked back at the data, they realized, man, a lot of times people weren't even counting these. Like, they would have these and then they wouldn't go to the hospital or anything. They wouldn't even say anything. And they had a real stroke a week later and this got lost in the data. But we are seeing these on a lot of patients within 7 days of having an actual stroke.
That's crazy, because I've my first job out of the Army about a decade ago was an EMT, and we actually learned then that, and this is like, you know, the bottom level of, you know, medical care, that oftentimes TIAs are predictive of a stroke.
Sure. And they have been like a predictive model in terms of if this person has TIAs, they are more likely to have a stroke. That has been known for a long time. What they're saying in this study, they looked at, by the way, a sample size of 2,400 people that had had ischemic strokes. And in them, about 550 patients had TIAs prior to it. And most of those cases occurred within the preceding 7 days. So that's a decent chance, about 1 in 5.
Yeah, I woke up with partial face paralysis today. Turns out, no big deal, nothing to worry about, don't need to see the doctor. I'm not alarmed at all.
We had known before that TIAs were indicative of somebody who would have a stroke, because obviously that shows up in the data. What we didn't realize is that these were actually an indicator of something happening within the next 5 to 7 days as a specific warning signal for this type of stroke to happen later on. Very, very interesting stuff. I love any time that we find this out, because strokes, similar to what Damien was talking about brain amoebas, things like strokes kind of freak me out too, because you don't have to be 60. Like, it helps if you're a 60-year-old woman or something, but like, you could just be a 35-year-old dude walking around, stroke go to your head, and you could just die in a second. Like, that shit happens on the regular.
And the fact that it's a 50-50, strokes are either ischemic, meaning it's a blockage, yeah, or they're hemorrhagic, yes, meaning a vessel burst.
Yes.
And there's very specific medications.
Yeah, and which is, unless you are in surgery, you're pretty fucked.
Yeah. Keep in mind, the general rule, if you have a stroke, this is just me trying to educate people because I think this is a very important thing. You have, in general, it's thought of as a 3-hour window from the start of the stroke. So a certain percentage, yeah, of that time is going to be spent just having a family member or you recognize that a stroke has happened.
Yeah.
A certain percentage of that time is going to be transport to the hospital. And then a certain percentage of that time is going to be loading you up into an x-ray machine and waiting for the results, yeah, because they can't just give you a medication right off the bat.
Yes.
And any time after 3, you're talking permanent brain damage.
Yeah. People don't do those calculations. Like, I think I told you this when I was having my medical emergency and my wife was rushing me to the hospital and I felt like my bladder was going to burst and I was like screaming in the car seat. And then I was like, there is no way this is getting resolved within an hour and a half. Like, it's not like I'm going to show up to the door of the ER and somebody's going to whisk me away to a magic fix everything room. Like, they're going to have to look at this and figure out what's going on. Not to mention, by the way, they ended up making me sit in the lobby.
Waiting in the lobby.
But like, yeah, screaming, by the way, at the top of my lungs before they brought me in for emergency surgery. But when that was going on the drive, I was like, whatever this pain is, it's with me for 2 hours. Like, what I'm feeling right now is not a temporary thing. And that's fucking terrifying. Same thing with the stroke. It's not like I walk through that door and all of a sudden stroke is cured. Mm-hmm. No problem anymore. Like, you have to add in all of the, oh, now we get the radiology tech and now they got to put a film in. They got to call you back. Oh, you had to take a COVID test first. Oh, well, there's 3 people ahead of you. Now let's get it. Okay.
The doctor needs a bribe.
Yeah. I always bribe the doctor, not necessarily to look at my x-rays quicker, but just to alter them to make my dick look bigger. Just like, in case a nurse is looking.
Yeah, yeah. You know, go to the ER, but like, leave a $100 bill just hanging out of your wallet, yeah, and see how much faster shit gets done. Oh, we just have a drug that fixes every stroke. We could just inject you with that. We had no idea we were going to bribe you.
Let me get my insurance card here. Oh, I'm sorry. There's too many Magnum condoms in the way. Let me just sort through all these. Oh, my black card. Oh, well, I guess we won't need this today.
We can't let this huge penis die. Give me the drug stat.
Sir, that's just a library card that you've covered in Sharpie.
Okay, but the Magnums are real, and I'm not willing to take the chance.
All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 488, where you learned all about how some open access journals are disappearing, but it's not really a big deal. How a Florida teenager died after an innocent swim in a lake. How high-altitude hummingbirds survive freezing cold nights, and how TIAs might be very important clues to future strokes. Thank you so much for joining me, and come on back next week for Science Faction 489.
So the hummingbird is able to bring its internal temperature down to 3 degrees above freezing? Sounds like my ex-wife.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.